Tonight on Circle A Radio, we talked to forest activists who participated in the multi-year campaign to defend Eagle Creek from logging. The interviews took place at the 10-year anniversary celebration of the victory. Stay tuned. We begin tonight with Brenna Bell.
My name is Brenna Bell, and the Eagle Timber Sale was planned under the rather infamous salvage rider, which was passed in the Clinton administration as a rider to an appropriations bill. And what the salvage rider did was exempt all timber sales that were salvage sales for trees that had been disease-infested or burned or could be disease-infested or burned, which basically means every tree. And they exempted it from legal review. And so we also called it the lawless logging rider. And Eagle was one of the last timber sales to be approved under that, which meant there couldn't be any legal challenge on it. It is in the Clackamas River watershed, which is the drinking watershed for West Lynn, Lake Oswego, and Oregon City, and probably Estacada as well, I think. It was a 28 million board foot sale that they were going to take out of a little more than 1,000 acres of naturally regenerated second growth forests that grew back after the Shearer Burn, which was a very large burn, Mount Hood National Forest, I think, in the late 1800s. And there are also some really amazing legacy old growth trees in the area. And so because it's in a municipal watershed, because it had the legacy old growth trees and beautifully regrowing second growth forests, and because we could never challenge it legally, the only recourse that we had to stop the sale was through the court of public opinion and through putting our bodies on the line and doing direct action. And so one of the things I think that was amazing about the campaign is we used both very effectively. People combined direct action in road blockades, in tree sits, in, you know, generally disruptive behavior with a lot of organizing and education in town and bringing people out in hikes and doing monthly Cascadia forest reviews and getting politicians on our side and even courting the timber company, which eventually said that it was open to canceling the sale if the Forest Service decided it was in the public interest. So we use a real combination of tactics. The only one we couldn't use is the one that I now focus on mostly is legal battles of the sales, but to delay the sale for years. And in the end, we were able to stop 2/3 of the sale from getting logged, including saving most of the beautiful old trees on the land. Mm-hmm. I got involved with Cascadia Forest Alliance in about June of 1997. I just graduated from Lewis and Clark College and had the desire to go save big trees. And happily, CFA showed up as the place to do that. And so I got involved and then stayed involved pretty much through the entire campaign in a variety of different ways. I've been trying to remember them all. I know I did a lot of the in-town things. I had a job in town and I needed to stay there most of the time. And so I helped publish the newsletter and put on the Cascadia Forest Review and do outreach and education and create educational materials. And somewhere during that first year, I decided that it would be a good thing for both the Eagle campaign and forest issues generally for me to go to law school and become an environmental lawyer. So I did. I started law school in September of 1998 and stayed involved with CFA for the entire time that I was in law school. So I was doing things like looking at the timber sale environmental impact assessment and trying to translate the scientific and political and legal jargon in that to the direct action activists and then try and understand the direct action activists and translate that back to the people who are more in town. And I think a lot of my role in CFA was kind of to bridge the two worlds. I felt really comfortable in both. But it was a constant. There was never a time during the campaign that it wasn't in my mind, that it wasn't something that I was working on. I mean, it was absolutely life-transforming, and it's completely set me on the path that I'm on now.
So you said that this was really instrumental and set you on your path in your life. Do you want to talk about where your life's taken you since Eagle?
Sure. Well, I did manage to finish law school from Lewis and Clark with an environmental law degree, and I studied for the bar exam, sometimes up at the trees. That felt great to be at an action camp with my bar books. And I was hoping to work still on Mount Hood Forest issues, but there just wasn't really the capacity. BARC was the only group who was kind of like that, and still they weren't ready for a lawyer. So I worked with the Klamath-Siskiyou Wildland Center doing timber sale litigation in Southern Oregon for 3 years, and then moved back to Portland, have put a lot of my time and energy into Try On Life Community Farm, which in a lot of ways, the organizing skills that I learned as part of the Eagle campaign totally gave me the skills that I needed in the campaign that we used to save that farm from becoming a housing development. Because I knew how to do political media and how to talk to legislators. I mean, just how to talk to the people that we needed to talk to and spread a word and develop a campaign and understand rhetoric and things. So that was super helpful. Save the Farm. I've been there for the past 9 years, raising kids, raising goats, and still being active in forest issues as I can. And now I work for BART as an environmental attorney focused on Mount Hood issues, which is great. It feels very full circle.
I love you, Mommy.
Oh, thank you. Feels super full circle to be there. And with that interjection, feels great to be here at Eagle again with my kids. And they just played all afternoon in Sunset Grove. And it just feels amazing to have this continuity of experience and to be able to really reflect on how the skills I learned in the campaign and the relationships I learned on that campaign not only saved a forest, but they totally changed my life and bettered it.
Do you want to talk any about some of the things you're working on now more specifically, or, you know, point people to resources to get more involved?
Well, I'll say first of all about timber sales that are still going on in the Mount Hood National Forest. I think a lot of people don't know that the logging program is still really active and alive. And one of the most difficult things that we're facing is the Forest Service is now couching all of their timber sales in the rhetoric of restoration. And so they're going and logging second growth forests and saying that they're doing it for forest health. But in order to access those tree stands, they're rebuilding miles and miles and miles of road with really intense hydrologic impacts, which is not a restorative thing. So we're having to convince people that logging second growth can also be a very environmentally damaging thing. We're focused on the Jazz timber sale in the Clackamas River Ranger District, which in many ways is actually more environmentally destructive than the Eagle sale, but doesn't have the showy old growth trees, so hasn't had the same kind of public outcry against it. But really wanting to remind people that forest ecosystems need to be left alone to restore themselves. And the best thing we could be doing for the forest is taking roads out of the system rather than rebuilding. They're rebuilding 11 miles of road that have already been decommissioned at Jazz. People could really focus on supporting the work that BARC is doing and getting the word out. That's on one end, the kind of what we're doing, the work I'm doing in the forest. And the second level of work, the work that we're doing at Try On Life Community Farm and in the city, is really focused on what do we do to live lives that are more environmentally in balance, and what do we do to build culture that is more respectful to the earth. We can't just say no to things. Saying no can be fun and easy, and it's really clear, like, we're going to stop the Eagle timber sale. Okay, now what? Where do we go from there? How do we change our lives? How do we live in a way that's more in right relationship with each other and the earth? So for both of those organizations, we all have websites, and you can look for BARC at bark-out.org and tryonfarm.org for more information about either.
Awesome. Is there anything else you want to add?
I'm just so happy that my life overlapped with this foresting campaign, you know? It can be an exhausting thing to work for so many years. I think I was part of the Eagle campaign for just over 6 years, and we won. It's exhausting and we won. And sometimes people are in campaigns for that long and they lose. But still the skills and the relationships and the work that we do, like whether you win or lose, like it's so invaluable to keep working to make, you know, our lives and the earth better. And I just know that I'm definitely a better person and this forest is a better place for this campaign. I'm really grateful for it.
My name is Sylvan, and I guess I was involved in Eagle for a long period of time. It's sort of odd to think about how much longer. When we got started in, I don't know, the years 95, 96, and all the way through the end. I mean, at that time I was living with Ivan, and he was more interested in actually camping up here. Like, we had a witness camp on some of the early logging they did on the upper road. I can't remember unit numbers, but, you know, Ivan was the only person that stayed there, and I used to come up after work, because I was working south of town, and I would come up after work and drop off stuff and go back to town because I had to go to work in the morning, and he just sort of lived there by himself and watched them log all day. I mean, and everybody was like, witness camp. is that a thing? It grew, as everybody knows who's involved, like more and more people, until you were like, wow, I don't know all these people. I'm meeting people for the first time at parties, and they're like, oh, have you heard about Eagle? And you're like, yeah, actually I have. Like, how did you hear about it? Like, it just spread. To me, that's a sign of a successful campaign, when you start hearing people that you don't know, or hear about people doing actions or doing this for that, that you're like, wow, we didn't coordinate that. We didn't even know about that. They didn't even tell us. There's no connection, but they took it on as their own. Like, that's when you've got like a groundswell of people that are interested in something. Like, we're seeing that with Nestle. We're like, people that we haven't talked to, that haven't come to us and asked what should we do, that they just went and did this, and you're like, this is great. Like, everybody cares, and that's a sign that there's a large enough mass of people that, you know, change is going to happen. So I think it's a positive thing when you aren't in control, nobody's in control of the entire, like, a movement, instead of just a few people trying to do something.
Are there any specific memories or things that come up for you when you're thinking about the Eagle Creek campaign? It was a long campaign. You're here. We're celebrating 10 years after the victory. How do you feel about that?
10 years is a long time. As far as memories about Eagle, I mean, I have so many memories of doing various things. And comparing memories with people today has been interesting, because you realize that we all did such different things. Like, oh, you didn't bike up and down the road a bazillion times carrying supplies? Like, wow, I thought everybody did that. Like, just me. I was the dumb one that did that because it was hard.
Did you continue on doing environmental work after the Eagle Creek victory?
Nothing so engrossing. I mean, I'm still in contact with a lot of people that are involved in BARC. My wife is on the board of BARC, so we donate money to BARC and go to these events for them and do fundraisers. So, I mean, that kind of thing. But, and we'll go out on hikes with BARC. But, I mean, I don't personally do a lot of actual work, you know. I'm kind of, I've learned how to avoid getting jobs dumped on me, right? Although with the Nestle campaign, the Food and Water Watch, I've actually now taken over the blog. Keep Nestle out at WordPress.com.
My name is Cicada, and I was a part of the campaign in 1999, and I lived out in the forest for 4 months, then continued in town for a really, I don't remember how long period of time after that. After it was all over and the sale had been canceled, the fact that we could do something that made a difference together turned a key in my brain that hadn't been turned before. It also was a time that coming together with all of these people in Cascadia Forest Alliance and people coming to the set from various places gave me this different perspective, and I figured out that I'd been lied to pretty much my whole life, which changed everything. And then I consequently went from Eagle Creek to the WTO, and then continued on a path of various demonstrations and social movement type things, one of which is books to prisoners, which I've done in 3 states, sending books to people who are incarcerated for free. Another one that I've done was Bikes Across Borders, where we would bike across from Texas to Mexico, and we would donate bikes and tools to communities. The idea was for them to choose what to do with them. And I lived at a place called the Rhizome Collective that had bioremediation drive. A lot of people would roll through there with a lot of different things, like Earth First Roadshow, and it was kind of a gathering place. And so more than being a part of the things that happened there, I was around for all the things that happened there. And I also hosted a radio show on a pirate station.
So how does it feel to be out here celebrating the 10-year anniversary of the victory of the cancellation of the Eagle Creek timber sale?
It feels great. It feels like this thing that I've... not so vaguely in my past, because some of my very closest friends have come out of it. So it's not buried in the past yet. At the same time, it's been sort of in the shadows as a shadow, this thing that I did that I'm proud of, but comes through more as something that is maybe more present in my life than I think. And as something that, yeah, I'm super proud to be a part of this, and super proud to be a part of this with all the people that I was with. I am inspired by this reunion. I learned a few things. I learned that there were more successful sales canceled than I'd thought, and that this is not just an anomaly or some strange happening. And in telling a woman that I rode in a car share up with two here when I started to tell her about the salvage rider and about the things that I learned about how I learned how to identify herbal medicine in the forest and things that were edible and how to talk to the media. I realized just how many skills that I gained from my time at Eagle.
You are listening to Circle A Radio, where we are celebrating the 10-year anniversary of the Eagle Creek victory.
My name is Sarah Wald, and I got involved in the Eagle Creek campaign in 1997 when I was a college student at Reed and was involved with Blue Heron Earth First from 97 through when I graduated, and then stayed more involved with Cascadia Forest Alliance and did a variety of things in town from the roots, the newsletter, and outreach and donations and leading hikes to hanging out in the forest as well. And the review, our monthly event, that was a way for us to tell the community what was happening in the forest and also to host guest speakers so that we could connect what was happening at Eagle with environmental issues around the U.S. and really around the world. And so different speakers would come and give a presentation, and there would be a local band that would play, and there would be updates from the Eagle Creek campaign. And it was a really wonderful way to build community and generate education.
Mm-hmm. How did it impact your life to be part of this campaign?
You know, I'm always going to think about my involvement in protecting Eagle Creek and the party plate in that campaign as one of the most significant things that I've done with my life. And to be able to come back out here and see this forest and to know not only what it meant to protect this area, but the way it was able to change the conversation about logging and the way it was able to give strength to other efforts to protect Mount Hood National Forest, like the work that BARC is doing today, is really an important legacy to me of the work so many thousands of people contributed to protecting Eagle. It was also the place that I learned about public land management. It was the place I learned about environmental policy, the NEPA process, the importance of many of the environmental laws that were passed in the 1970s, and it was where I learned about campaign strategy. I was young when I got involved in Eagle, and I learned how to talk to media, how to put out a press release, how to organize an event, how to run a phone tree and why one would run a phone tree, how to think about power mapping and selecting campaigns and winning campaigns. So it was really, I think, for many people, including myself, it wasn't just about Eagle, but about us learning skills and leadership abilities that would bring us into many other movements and other organizations as we left CFA when Eagle was saved and moved on to other things.
And do you want to talk about some of those things you moved on to afterwards?
So I've been involved in a variety of other organizations. I was very involved in BARC. I was one of the first staff members at BARC, and I was on the board of BARC for 6 years. I've done work on immigrant rights and work with Occupy Wall Street in New York, and I've been involved with a lot of campus sustainability efforts. I left Portland in 2003 and moved to Rhode Island and began a PhD program in American Studies, and I now teach environmental studies and English literature at Drew University in New Jersey. And so I was able to take many of the lessons I learned at Eagle and apply them to other campaigns, but also to connect that to academic work and kind of thinking about questions around place and identity and race and gender and sexuality in ways that were definitely shaped by my work at Eagle, but went on to be academic work and are shaped the way I try to bring the classroom and the community together in my work as a professor.
And so how does it feel to be out here?
I haven't been out to Eagle since the sale was canceled. And what's really amazing to me is the strength of the community that's still out here. I mean, some of us kept in touch, some of us didn't, and we still feel like a community and still feel like a family, and that we were able to really build a network of people that will continue to be working on issues of social and environmental and economic justice well after the sale, that we're still doing that work today in different ways.
My name is Joy Keene. I grew up in Michigan. I moved out here year 2000. Right before I left Michigan, I had read a Newsweek article about the WTO, which was the first time I'd ever heard of the anti-corporate anything. We didn't get that kind of media in Michigan. My sister had moved out here, and so her and her partner had been working on, you know, the Eagle Creek sale and working with CFA. And I went to the CFA Resist Dance, which was in Laurelhurst Park. And it was pouring rain and nobody was dancing. And this boy comes up and asks me to dance. And he's like, this is a dance, so we should dance. I'm like, okay. And I don't know, 4 years later, we were married. So, you know, I met him, got involved with a lot of the people in that group. We did a lot of folding newsletters and organizing events and soliciting donations of food and bringing food up to the trees, to the people that were in the tree sits and the tree pod. I don't think I was as involved as a lot of people because people had been working on it for 4 or 5 years. So I was in the second wave, I would say. I mean, the campaign went on so long that there was several waves of people. And I was one of the few people that kept my name. I didn't have a forest name. I met almost all the friends I have in Portland for the last 12 years. I met somehow through CFA. It changed my life completely. If you'd told people back east where I grew up that the U.S. government was taking your tax dollars, cutting thousands and thousands of miles of road into your public lands at a serious loss every single year so that private companies can come and take the forest away, nobody would believe me. Like, it's just too crazy. They're like, they're doing it at a loss every year. So why do they keep doing it? It's just stupid. It's a waste of money. It's a boondoggle. The timber sale program needs to stop. It's a waste of taxpayer dollars. So, like I said, it changed my life a lot. And I, since then, I've been working with BARC for the last 6 or 7 years, who kind of took up the reins after Eagle was canceled. And we don't do direct action per se, but we definitely get a lot done.
You have a pretty personal connection with the fight against privatizing water in the gorge. So I wonder if you could give a little background and tell people where it's at now.
Nestle, world's largest food corporation, wants to build a water bottling plant out in the gorge. They came to town around the end of 2008. A coalition of environmental, labor, religious groups got together to stop them because Nestle is heinous in several different ways. BARC was fighting it because they want to privatize the water that's coming off of national forest land. We just see it as the first step. You know, they just want to get their foot in the door. If this plant went through, Governor Kitzhaber would basically be the first governor handing over public water to Nestle. So we think that's a really bad precedent set. So we've been fighting for 3 years. We've been basically in an administrative appeal / quasi-legal suit with the three state agencies that control the water. They wanted to build the plant in 2009, and it's here it is almost the middle of 2012, and they haven't even broke ground on anything or gotten the rights to anything. So we're winning. They're pretty easy to organize against because they're so hated. They're the most boycotted company in the world. But they dangled jobs in front of people. Realistically, the people of Cascade Locks, where they want to put the plant, can only expect probably 2 to 10 jobs. We are saying that 2 to 10 really low-paid, dangerous jobs is not worth giving away 100 million gallons a year of public water so that some Swiss corporation can make a profit. The one thing that BARC knows is important is if you want to save the woods, get people out into them, because then they know what they're working to save. And you take people out to see old growth in the woods, they'll fall in love with it. They'll work to save it. That's been sort of our mantra, is to get people out in the woods and see what's still there and see what's worth saving.
And how do you guys do that?
We have a monthly hike, third Sunday of every month. It's free. Come on in. You'll get to see mostly good stuff. You'll get to see some clear cuts, which are not so pretty, but it's all part of the package that is Mount Hood. So come on out.
That was Joy, and you are listening to Circle A Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. We are listening to interviews made at the 10-year anniversary reunion of forest activists who worked on the successful Eagle Creek campaign.
My name is Jen, and I was involved in Eagle Creek as a tree sitter, a roadblocker, pod sitter. It was intense and all-encompassing and challenging and really passion-driven and a really wonderful thing that I did. And it feels good. I feel like there's a lot of memories that just come flooding back from that are just sort of place-based, like memories that are in the land. And I haven't been back here for probably, I visited only once or twice since the campaign finished. And it just feels really good to be out in the forest and to know that we all worked really hard to preserve this area and just to be in the community again and catching up with everybody.
Did you continue doing social justice work or environmental work?
For a little while, I did a little Native solidarity work. I did some street medicing and studied herbal medicine. And then I got really back into my creative work. So doing music and art mostly with my time these days.
Hi, my name's Hazel. I live in Portland currently. During the time of the Eagle Creek tree sit, I did not live in or near Portland. I lived outside of Eugene. I came up to the Eagle tree sit really once for a big action that a lot of people were at. And the reason why I didn't spend more time up here was because I was at the Fall Creek tree sit that was in the Willamette National Forest outside of Eugene.
And can you tell people a little bit more about what the interaction was between the two campaigns and then really what was going on at Fall Creek?
I always thought of the Eagle Tree Sit, Fall Creek, and Windberry were all, you know, fairly close to each other. I always thought of us more as like sibling, sister tree sits. There was quite a back and forth of lots of different people. Like I said, I didn't spend a ton of time up at Eagle. People went back and forth. We'd meet up in town and go to meetings. You know, whenever I was in Portland, I'd hit the forest review that the Eagle Creek folks were doing and stuff like that.
What ended up happening with Fall Creek?
Well, it took a lot to protect Fall Creek. I've been really lucky to be involved with a few really successful campaigns, meaning that we were able to protect those places, and that's not what always happens. So when I look back trying to identify you know, what allowed some of these campaigns, like specifically I'm talking about the Warner Creek campaign and the Fall Creek campaign, and I really think that it was endurance. It was really, really strong commitment by more than one person. I think there always has to be a group that's really committed and having a strong vision and just a ton of perseverance. We really loved those places and still love those places, and we're committed to defend them and, you know, make sacrifices in our personal lives in order to do that. So the Fall Creek tree sit felt like it lasted forever. It was a little bit more than 4 years. There was a lot of trading off. I think what ended up making us win and be successful at Fall Creek was the use of a lot of different tactics, ranging from a variety of different direct action tactics, some which were, you know, quite controversial and some which were more traditional and quote unquote acceptable. There was also just a ton of the background work, the community organizing in town, the taking folks out to see the forest and start to love the place on their own. One of the linchpin tactics that we used is also a traditional tactic that helps make direct action campaigns win is when direct action really works hand in hand with legal strategies. So we became aware that there was a sensitive species living in the area called a red treeval. It's one of the primary food sources for the endangered spotted owl. So the red treeval is an endangered, so threatened and sensitive species and under survey and manage. So the way survey and manage works is that you survey for species, and then if you find them, you manage for them. So the management protection aspect for a red treeval, if you find an active nest, is to buffer it with 10 acres around it. The Forest Service had gone in and done all those surveys, and conveniently they hadn't found many red treevals, but we were living out there and we were living in the upper canopy, which is where the red treevals live. We started noticing a lot of signs and we started learning a lot about the red treevals, about their habitats, about the kinds of nests they build, and we were out climbing around and we were finding them everywhere. They are very, very shy creatures, so we didn't get to see many of them. But the way the Forest Service locates them is by identifying their nests. And when you find there's a way that you can figure out whether it's active or inactive. And we were just finding tons of active nests. So finally, we started doing these surveys and getting all of the official information that the Forest Service needed and doing it very formally and bringing it to the Forest Service, our proof of the nests, and marking them and mapping them and having meetings with the Forest Service. Eventually, that's how we were able to protect the area, because we found so many nests and all those nests had to be buffered. And basically, once that whole process was done, there wasn't really very much left of the sale. So it wasn't worth it for them to log those little tiny remainder bits that were outside of the protected buffers. So it was kind of an amazing time period having so many campaigns that we actually were able to protect those places. So there was Eagle that was able to do that up here where we are celebrating the 10th anniversary, which is really amazing. We got to go out to the grove where the tree sits were, and there those trees are still beautiful and standing and amazing. Then at Fall Creek at Winbury. And then there's also the way that sometimes we are not successful in protecting a specific area, but when I look back 10 years from now, the mindset was really different. We have made a huge impact just on the mindset of the average person in this country about how they think about environmental issues and caring about the environment, and then also huge changes in policy. Not that there's still so much more to do, because there is a ton more to do, but I think that we've had a lot of success in direct and indirect ways, and that's really amazing to see.
How would you say it's impacted your life? Have you continued doing environmental work, social justice work?
Yes, I continue to do both. And I was really interested in social justice issues when I did start doing environmental work and tree sitting. I was always working to incorporate that. I still do environmental work. That's actually been, you know, something that I've focused on more in the last year with the Occupy movement really taking off, because I think my main focus the whole time, even when I was tree sitting, is to have a larger, really positive social change and shift that happens in our society. And I'm really into a revolutionary movement that can create a deep and profound change in our society. With everything that's been happening with Occupy, it's made a lot of sense for me to put my energy into emerging social movements that have been happening in the past year. And it's a big focus for me to get an environmental angle into that, because really we need to be doing it all. It can't be disconnected anymore. I think for years the powers that be have tried to separate the environmental and the social, and really it's all one thing that we need. Big changes in our society, big changes in our country, in our world. It's going to have to happen on all levels.
Vagrant Cascadian. I did the tree sit right around the turn of the millennia for a little bit. In 2000, I got involved with the blockades at the upper and lower roads, mostly the upper road. I had come from another successful campaign at the end of 99, Watch Mountain, where we had a very broad aggregation of different coalitions. The local community was really supportive. The indigenous Kalich community was supportive. The Forest Service was reluctantly, but sort of kind of supportive, mostly because of the local community involvement. That was a really successful campaign. So I came with an eye of kind of an expectation, like it had some things that sounded similar, like to some degree Vanport already wanted out of the sale. And so there were some interesting alliances where it was like the timber company trying to petition the Forest Service to not log, and the Forest Service insisting they log, and a bunch of other community people trying to ironically work with the timber company, more or less. Those were interesting parallels. I was kind of drawn to the unconventional perspectives that both of those campaigns had. It sounded like something that could really, really make a difference, because I've always seen the traditional divide between, like, you know, the anti-environmentalists versus jobs in the woods as being a false drawing of lines. So I was really excited to be involved in campaigns which, to some degree, one way or another, were trying to blur those lines and show through the falsehood. It seems like the only way we're ever really going to get anywhere with these things. I don't know how really successful that was. The campaigns themselves were successful. I don't know on a day-to-day basis how much we saw that.
How did it impact your life being part of these forest campaigns?
It was definitely a huge part of it was a bit of like the coming out of like a free state of this autonomous communities getting together, a bunch of ragtag folks working together, working through their issues, and still with some common goals and meeting things on a day-to-day basis, building a larger strategy, and just simply existing in the woods.
Introduce yourself.
Amy Harwood.
And Amy, can you talk about your involvement with the Eagle Creek timber sale that was canceled just 10 years ago?
I first came out to Eagle Creek about 2 weeks after I moved here in 1998. And I came from the forests in Maine, which are often private land, and it blew my mind that there was this much forest that I could be part of deciding the future of, and had a huge impact on me. And I was involved with the campaign all through those years, and then a couple years afterwards, I went on staff at BARC. We're the defenders of Mount Hood National Forest, and we still are fighting timber sales today.
Do you want to talk a bit about how it impacted your life to be part of the Eagle Creek timber sale and the other sales that you've worked on?
Well, it had a huge impact on me. My entire life changed after that campaign, I think for the better. And I think the biggest thing that it left for me was a hope that we could, you know, it sounds cheesy to say this, but we could make a difference. And it gave me a lot of courage. Like I associate that time with finding bravery within myself that I didn't even know I was capable of. And I thought about that a lot during the period where BARC was working to stop the Palomar pipeline, which was a proposed gas pipeline across Mount Hood, and it would have left a highway width swath of clear cut permanently in the forest. And that was a really tough fight for 4 years. We worked on that campaign, and it sort of seemed like the kind of thing if we came down to the last stand, we were all willing to go back into the forest and do the type of direct action that had happened around Eagle. Probably it would have had to be on a much bigger level. And I wasn't afraid of that. I wasn't hoping for it because that's a really hard life. And I don't want to see my friends all in jail. And I don't want to see my friends all putting their bodies on the line. But I think that I knew we could do it. And that made me feel a lot more okay when we would have setbacks in that campaign. Ultimately, we won. The Palomar pipeline is now no longer a proposed pipeline. It's likely, though, that we'll see things like that in the future. BARC's continuing to fight timber sales, not that much different than the ones that Eagle was. And actually, some of them are even worse than those days. And many of them are much bigger and have larger landscape size. So they're requiring more roads and more infrastructure. But the thing I've been really focusing on is the energy infrastructure. I think that areas like Mount Hood that are close to large population centers are going to be seeing national forests as a place for energy resources, whether it's biomass, actually taking trees and biomass out of the forest, or as cheap ways to transmit energy from other areas like the wind that we're seeing developed in the east side of the state. Those lines have to go somewhere, and it's a lot easier for them to run them over public land. And so that's something that BARC's been really focused on, and personally I've been really focused on in my activism since then.
What was sparked by your time in the forest?
So I was on staff at BARC for just over 6 years, and in that period I found myself getting so frustrated all the time. I would really like lose my cool in meetings a lot of the times, and which is sort of my personality. But also I recognized that it had a lot to do with just feeling pissed off that I couldn't see where change was happening. Like, I didn't feel like I was witnessing change when I was sitting in meetings with the Forest Service or when we were writing appeals and strategizing our next lawsuit. And I started thinking, you know, there's got to be more to it than this. So my partner and I, who was also part of the Eagle Creek campaign, we decided to start Signal Fire. And the idea is to bring artists into some of our remaining wild places. But we try to always have our trips also visit areas that are either threatened or have been impacted by logging and development, specifically looking at public lands as a cultural resource as well. And we hope that when artists return from these trips, that they have been transformed in that same way that I remember being transformed at the Eagle Creek protests and logging protests. And even though the intensity isn't nearly as much, I think that just the act of going out into the forest and learning about it is so huge still that I'm hoping that those change makers, I can see for myself, like, where change might actually be happening. I think artists have a language around possibility that a lot of people are not as practiced in. And that's kind of what artists are in the business of, is like going into a studio and being and thinking, you know, I want to do something that nobody's ever thought of before and are comfortable with that process. And I want to see that process coming into activism again, because I think the same old tactics don't work anymore. So that's the idea. And we've been doing that for 4 years, and we have a bunch of different trips that we lead. And ultimately, we've slowly started to see a network of artists working together, and we've had several of them do shows from their time out in the forest with us, and that just feels amazing. It feels totally incredible to witness that happening. So I'm not quite as frustrated anymore with my activism. I see much more possibility. If people are interested in Signal Fire, we have a website, signalfirearts.org, where you can find out about applying to some of our programs. I think the thing for me coming out here, I have never come back here, even though for Bark, I've been out in the forest over and over. I mean, you know, a couple days a week I was coming out here, and I know this forest like the back of my hand. I would intentionally not come up these roads and not go to the Eagle units, because in my mind I really wanted to believe that they were just being left alone and resting. And it was so intense to have all this energy happening out here for so many years that I felt better in my mind that they were kind of being left to rest. And I feel so restored myself coming out here with all these people and seeing how much everybody has done with their life and how impacted people have been. And also that there's still this network of people. And I think I just sense that there is something bigger that's brewing, and that's exciting.
That was Amy here on Circle A Radio.
My name is Alex Brown, and I got involved in late 1999. I had just graduated from the University of Oregon and was living back at home in Portland and really wanted to get involved with forest conservation generally. And the Eagle Creek Timber Sale was the first opportunity for me to learn about forest policy and learn where the government was failing our forests on Mount Hood in particular. And I met Cascadia Forest Alliance and started getting involved.
What did it do for you to get involved in this work?
It completely changed the course of my life. I, for the first time, learned really what public land meant and how special it was. And I learned that a community who cares can actually come together and make a difference. I got involved doing everything from making phone calls and doing a phone tree to helping write a newsletter to eventually knowing how to lead hikes and talk to people about the actual policy that was driving the Eagle Creek timber sale and how it was going to impact negatively our drinking watersheds. In the late 90s, the Eagle Creek timber sale opened a lot of people's minds to what was wrong with the Forest Service timber sale program. And for me, that was kind of a permanent change. I was lucky enough to be hired at Oregon Natural Resources Council, which is a statewide forest conservation organization, which now goes by the name Oregon Wild. And was there from 2000 until 2005 trying to gain permanent protections through wilderness legislation for some of the areas. As a matter of fact, the area we're sitting right next to in the forest, to protect it permanently as wilderness after all of these activists in this movement had stopped it from being logged. And in 2005, I transitioned from wilderness efforts to working for BARC, which is the local nonprofit focused on protecting Mount Hood National Forest, not just through wilderness legislation, but through actually maintaining a monitoring presence and letting the Forest Service know that even though it's 10 years after the Eagle Creek timber sale was stopped, that people still care about Mount Hood National Forest.
Earlier, we were just talking about jazz and comparing it to Eagle Creek, and I wondered if you could talk a little bit about that for the listening audience.
The Jazz Timber Sale is it's a 2,000-acre timber sale that would log approximately 28 million board feet. This is in the order of 5,000 to 6,000 log trucks worth of trees in the Clackamas River watershed, the same watershed that Eagle Creek was planned in. And what's so important about Jazz is that Jazz is a logging project that the Forest Service is promoting as restoration. It's a forest that's actually recovering from past clear cuts. And it is the next generation of logging controversy in our public forest lands like Mount Hood National Forest. The Jazz Timber Sale would log on steep slopes. It would rebuild 11 miles of road that have either been decommissioned or have regrown naturally. And so in the effort, the Forest Service calls it restoration, but in reality, much of the natural restoration and recovery that occurred from these forests that were abused 40 years ago or longer is going to be undone. And to me, it's a natural progression for people who were involved in Eagle Creek and wanted to keep pristine forests from being logged. Well, the forest that did get logged in the early 20th century is now recovering, and whether or not we allow it to recover or not is a really big question. Right now, the Forest Service is on the wrong trajectory. The Jazz Timber Sale final decision is going to come out any time. We have been expecting it since early summer of 2012, and so we're spending a lot of time leading hikes, and we'll be submitting official comments on the timber sale. The best way to find out more information about Jazz or any other logging project or other development project in Mount Hood National Forest is go to BARC's website, which is www.bark-out.org.
You were talking a little bit about what we're out here for being a celebration, and I wondered if you might want to touch on that and anything else.
People rarely get the opportunity to feel like their individual actions, their body, their voice makes a difference. And I know that for myself, and I know for hundreds, if not thousands, of other people who were involved in the Eagle Creek campaign, had a chance to feel that. And sitting on this road that now no longer has a timber sale planned next to it, but instead is permanently protected wilderness, is an experience that I don't know if I'll ever get again in my life. And it's very meaningful, and I know that a lot of people feel the same way.
My name's Brush, and I'm here representing the many, many dozens, even hundreds of people who were really involved in the broader movements that were happening at the time, and for whom Eagle was a place that we saw as like embodying some of the life and the sense of the future and the sense of connectedness and creativity, both among the people that were there, that were living in the forest, that were working the campaign, and also provided a model of a long-term campaign that was really focused, that was combining work in the community in town with a direct action, full-time forest defense investment. And that was an inspiration. I wasn't somebody who was a core organizer for CFA at any point, but I came out to the forest. I sat in a tree for a while. I came to all the actions that I could make. I came to action camps. And this place was an inspiration for a generation of people that were linking urban struggles around the country and around the world with the care for the earth. And as somebody who came from New York, the first weekend I was in the West Coast, I was up at Eagle sitting in a tree. And it was a revelation. I've always had that strong sense of relationship with the earth and concern and desire to live a life that's woven with the earth. But this was the first time that I was experiencing not only a group of people that were doing that, but that were doing that in a way which was directly confronting the forces that are destroying it. And it changed my life.
Do you want to elaborate a little bit on how it impacted you?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's a whole host of different ways that we can look at it. One part of it is that I have stepped over the last 10, 12 years into a deeper and deeper sense of myself as somebody who's seeking to live as part of the earth. And Eagle was a key point of recognizing that that wasn't just something that we can feel sad about having lost in the past, but is actually something that we can, and in fact, maybe we have to look to in the future. And that's true for us, and we have the chance, we have the ability to leave the city, to leave the civilization and the empire, and to really live here. Now, Eagle, of course, you know, was supported in many, many ways by people that were living in the city, but it was a step forward. It was a step into a different way of framing our lives, and that's a step that I've continued to take over the last decade. And it's not only for us now, and something that I've become increasingly connected with is the recognition that we have descendants. I have two children, and beyond my own personal children, my connection with Indigenous people, my connection with people who have a stronger sense of the generations before and after helps me to realize that I'm here to lay a foundation and to set out to do my best to set up the next steps that others can take after me. And Eagle really embodied a lot of that. Another aspect of Eagle was the long-term campaign aspect. The fact that the vast majority of people in the beginning weren't there at the end, but they laid a foundation. They set up systems, they created a public image, they created a campaign that had goals that new people could come into and could learn and could create their own culture within, and then move on while leaving space for the next generation. Mm-hmm. And there were challenges. There's challenges in every movement. There's challenges in every struggle. But as we can see here at this gathering of folks who are coming together again, so many of those relationships that we had have remained. And for many of us, we've remained deeply invested in movements and organizing for political change, or many of us have moved into ways of living that are focused on creating a new world. And for myself, I live in both of those. And nonetheless, the relationships that we have with the people that we're here at Eagle remain powerful for me, and I think for many of us here in this gathering. It's been a blessing to witness that and to come together again.
Do you want to elaborate a little bit on other work that you do to both connect to building new ways and also to continue to dismantle the structures that are so damaging?
There's lots that my life has moved into, but maybe three core aspects. One is really looking at the social fabric of movements and communities, recognizing that as important as the short-term goals of a campaign are, the networks of relationships that we create and the skills that we build to grow movements are what will allow each particular campaign to build on itself and to grow into larger and larger movements and ultimately into a different way of organizing our world. So a real focus on facilitation and consensus and organizational health and well-being and the way that our sense of spirit is related to our sense of political change and health and developing groups that can really support individuals and being really healthy in the groups rather than burning out or hurting themselves. And at the same time, groups that can be really good at working with each other. Mm-hmm. So that's one aspect that I've been really focusing on. Another would be creating earth cultures and creating ways, not out of raw cloth, because we are drawing on what we can remember from the past and what we can learn from others that are doing it. And also, it's not something that can be finished now, but laying the foundation for recognizing what it can look like for people to make a choice to move out of empire, to move out of participating and reproducing and maybe even kind of railing against, but nonetheless living inside the empire, and instead to look towards a process in which the empire dies and dissolves, and out of it come a wide variety of different cultures and communities that are living with the earth and interacting with each other. A world, as the Zapatistas say, that can fit many worlds. Part of that has been Try on Life Community Farm, which is an organization and also an intentional community here in Portland that works a lot with children and works a lot with different kinds of groups in town to explore this question of what it means for us to live as part of the earth. So that's been really important to me. And then a third focus has been in this last year of really profound renewal of movement that feels to me much like the time around Eagle did, the late 90s and early 2000s. In this last year, one of the expressions of that I've been really excited about and really grateful to be part of is called the Portland Liberation Organizing Council. And that has been focused on, I mean, it's done some actions around foreclosure and housing and supporting communities in making decisions about what happens in the buildings that are in their communities and moving people that have been evicted back into their houses and supporting people using those spaces for community centers and things like that. And that's part of a larger effort, which is really rooted in recognizing that we as radicals, we as people who see ourselves creating a revolution, creating a transformation in the very fabric of how our society is organized, need to do that by weaving together and creating linkages between the many different traditions and practices that that are you know, leading towards radical change, and to do that in a way that's rooted in communities, that's linked to people's own recognition of their needs and linking those to each other. It's a humbling process, but it's a very inspiring process, and I feel really grateful to be here in this time and to have the history that I have with Eagle and with other campaigns, to have the wisdom and experience of those that have gone before us, both that are alive still and that aren't, and to be carrying that forward. And I think in this moment of celebrating the victory that we really won, and Eagle's really a powerful victory, and it's emblematic of a wide variety of victories that we won, not all of which were as clear and easily defined. It's a moment for us to really recognize our power as people, our power as organizing ourselves and each other, to sit deeply with ourselves with what do we want? What is the world that we really need? And to give ourselves to creating that, no matter what. And it's great to be here. I want to call out to all the people that were connected with Eagle. There's a lot of us that are here right now, and there's a lot of us who aren't here. There's a lot of people who still live in Portland who love that campaign, who came out, who did things for it. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways that people have taken that. I want to invite us to remember that time, to remember what we were doing. Many of us were very young. Not all of us, but many of us. And to remember the fire in our bellies, to remember the sense of inspiration, the sense of commitment we had. We made mistakes, and I think it's really important to learn from those mistakes. But we also did something, and we did it together. And that's important, and it's something that we need to keep doing. We're in a time right now where almost anything is possible. We don't know what the future is going to look like. And a lot of what happens will depend on us and will depend on the choices that we make together. And Eagle is an example of something that at times looked impossible. And it's a small example, but it's something that can, I think, inspire us. Inspire us to look beyond the seemingly inevitable machinery of the bureaucracy of a world gone mad, and instead look around the fire, see each other, and commit to each other. And in the end, we can win.
Thanks to everyone who worked to help save Eagle Creek, and thank you for listening to Circle A Radio. Circle A Radio can be heard monthly on the first Wednesday of the month here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. You can listen to our past work at kboo.fm/CircleA Radio.